Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe. Welcome to the Dream Job Cafe podcast. I'm here with my cousin, Sammy Port. He is the Senior Creative Director of Proscenium. Sammy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah. So let's just jump right in. So this is an interesting episode because, you know, we talk to a lot of people in different professional careers, but I was so excited to talk to you because you have turned your love of the arts and theater into a career. So take me back to, like, you were in Cornell and you went to the hospitality school there, very esteemed school. Yes. Tell me a little bit about your career journey and how you got to where you are at Proscenium.
Absolutely. I'd say my career journey really is and was dictated by my love of theme parks. And there's a through line here because growing up, as long as I can remember, and specifically in high school, I had this vision that I was going to somehow work in the world of theme parks and amusement parks. I didn't know in what capacity, but I knew I somehow wanted to be involved in that world. Whether or not it be the management or the engineering of roller coasters, I would go to these trade shows every year since I was 13 and just pass out business cards that said theme park enthusiast. This is also coming from someone who grew up in Tampa, so not too far from Disney, and I had Busch Gardens in my backyard and went to those parks all the time. So when I was applying to colleges, I eventually found Cornell and specifically the hospitality school, the hotel school, because I could see myself on a management track to work at theme parks. So throughout as I was applying to schools, that felt like the best fit, and luckily got in and tailored my academic journey to be a little bit more suited to theme park and amusement parks. So worked in parks every summer and then crafted my curriculum a little bit to be more specific to that world of like large scale entertainment.
And this is really interesting because you were doing everything the way people do it now, with all these internships and all this like prep work, and you were into it since you were a little kid. And you even, if I'm not mistaken, got like a highly coveted position at Disney, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then what's crazy, tell me a little bit about that. And then you completely was like, you know what? I'm going to switch gears. So tell me, that's awesome.
Thank you. So every summer in college, I wanted to work at a different theme park operator, or I wanted to work for a different theme park operator to get a really well-rounded sense of how different parks operate, how different companies operate. So I got, during my summers, I worked at Busch Gardens in Tampa. I worked at Cedar Point in Ohio, Six Flags in New England, in mostly in operational roles as far as like rides management. And those were very difficult, but also very rewarding summers. It's just the hours are long and you're outdoors and a lot of elements there. But it just sort of cemented this love of parks. And so I was sort of working on that path so that when I graduated college and I was thinking about what my next phase was, I had an opportunity to work at Epcot as a attractions manager in like a professional internship capacity. And worked in that right after college, moved to Orlando. And that job at Disney was essentially the culmination of everything I had worked for in my head.
I'm nailing it.
Yeah.
You're at the peak. You're where you want to be.
Yes. And I will say it was a very valuable experience. I think around that time of my life, and I'm glad I got it. I learned a ton of what worked with some amazing people and really I couldn't believe I was there. I mean, it was talk about imposter syndrome, and I just, the fact that I would get to sign off on a ride, and you know, the park had just opened Soarin' a few months prior. So just being part of a team to keep that operational and some of those growing pains that come with that. Mm-hmm. It was a phenomenal experience. And to be able to say again, to have had the Disney experiences, the training that you go through, the traditions training, there's a whole Disney University campus, which is
interesting.
Outside the park. I still save my notebooks from that. But the whole thing was kind of surreal. I mean, here I am like at Disney University and work.
Yeah. You get to see the underground, all the secret access to all the stuff that everybody who goes to Disney wants to know about.
And there's just so many things, so many best practices of working there that translate to every other part of your life, even just interpersonal relationships. And around that time, because that was my early 20s, as happy as I was to have had the opportunity, I knew that something else, I felt like I still needed to do something else that was very different than that. And that was still perform, because I had also grown up singing and performing on stage and loving it. And so now I'm in my early 20s. I'm in Orlando. I just worked, you know, having worked at Disney, and decided I wanted to switch gears and pursue to see where I could, what I could do with my stage performing and my singing.
Let me ask you a question though, before you go there. I'm guessing that took a lot of self-reflection, honesty, and courage to make that decision that a lot of people don't have, or that they're afraid to go there. Can you talk a little bit about like how you summoned the courage after all this time of doing everything right to say, you know what, let me try something else that's very, very hard to do?
That I think I felt supported. I felt like I had a strong support network and also I think I had established a lot of connections at that point. And so that if I were to make a leap, it wouldn't necessarily feel like it was into some abyss. I think it was that I had, without even realizing it, curated a series of, or a network of very authentic, real connections with people that I think would sort of help see me through to those next, you know, I had taken a lot of, when I was in Orlando and deciding I wanted to try something a little different, I was taking a lot of classes and meeting other performers and meeting coaches and meeting teachers. And therefore felt like I had some infrastructure in place to then make a leap. It never felt like it was a leap into the complete unknown. It was sort of an incremental. And then I also, you know, I supported myself with other jobs. Like, you know, I served at tables and did all that sort of quintessential and stereotypical work that I think happens when you're pursuing some of those more stuff in the arts, for example, with hours right. that aren't always traditional either. But it was it was a little bit of a leap of faith to a point, but I did feel I had a support network and I had some structure there.
That's great. All right. So you make this change and then what happens?
So I stay in Orlando. I just, you know, my internship with Disney had ended and I decided not to continue down that path. But I think what was helpful is staying in Orlando afforded me an opportunity to, you know, it wasn't like a big jump to New York City to try to uproot my entire life. I could still be somewhat close to friends and family. I was able to get jobs working in restaurants. And I'd found various auditions that were popping up. I didn't even necessarily know too much about what was coming, but I would, if a cruise ship was auditioning, or I would just go. I wanted to get the experience of auditioning as well, especially in Orlando, where it would be easier to be seen by casting directors. There was just less, I mean, compared to New York, generally there was just less people auditioning. So,
I can imagine. When I lived in Manhattan, I lived near either a casting agency or some sort of like studio or something like that. And there'd always be like a line of people like lying down the block waiting to get into their audition. Yeah. So, all right. So you start auditioning in Orlando.
I started auditioning, going again as predominantly as a singer, also going for commercial casting. And there's just a lot of that type of work. I still continue to make a lot of mistakes, but I think I hand wrote my resume on a piece of, you know, 3-hole punch paper and messily stapled it to a really bad photo of me. But it was just those types of process. I just sort of had to learn all that along the way. And what ended up happening shortly after me leaving Disney, this is probably 4 or 5 months after that, I auditioned for a show called Jubilee that was holding auditions in Orlando. And this is every 6 months they would go around a few different cities around the country to audition for the show. And the show was at the time in Las Vegas and had been there for 30 plus years. Went to the audition and was like, I sang a song from Rent, which is not the right genre for what they were looking for, but something worked. And they offered me a role in the show as a singer. So essentially within a matter of weeks, it was just, all right, we're moving to Vegas and we're going to just do this thing.
You're a professional working performer.
Yes. At that point now, you know, before that I had done a lot of performing. I had done a summer working at a Cedar Point amusement park as a performer as well, but never with I had done that, but it was never with the intention of pursuing that further. It was something I had always wanted to do and I loved it. But then I went back to school for my senior year of college, still with the intention of of working as in operations in the theme park industry. I kind of saw the Cedar Point summer as just sort of like a unexpected, fun, awesome experience, but still trying to pursue the operations side of theme parks. But so now this, yeah.
Well, so you're a working performer, and from what I remember, you worked on some cruise ships, doing shows on cruise ships, and so on and so forth. And tell me how you transitioned from performing to proscenium and what it is you even do now.
Right. Yeah. So all that to be said, the performing, me moving to Vegas, being part of that show, led to other opportunities in on stage and performing. So then cruise ships, to your point, and then what ultimately felt, you know what, now I should move to New York because I've done a few things and I guess I'm supposed to do that move. And so then I moved to New York to perform. But ultimately, after a couple of years, I just realized that it wasn't necessarily in my heart and my gut. And I think that that's something that I'm glad I realized relatively soon into my time, because it's such an intense profession. And if you're not fully, if your heart's not in it completely, then, you know, it's a little cliche, but it's probably good to look into some other opportunities. So around now, we're in my late 20s at this point, 29 or so. I was still performing, but I was sort of had an eye of a life beyond that, of that career path. And I ended up helping my cousin Daniel produce a musical called Spandex. It was it's a fun jukebox style musical about the 80s aerobics movement. And at the time, you know, we had this great product. He had written awesome. A beautiful show with another writer. And I was like, let's just do this. So we put this show up on its feet. I mean, and it was the first time I had been involved in production as opposed to being on stage. And that experience of being on the other side of it was so rewarding and intense. And it made me then want to get into production. And so at that point, and this is maybe the point of your podcast here, is like, oh, well, now what do I do? So I've performed for a while. I've worked in theme park operations and I've helped produce this little show. At the time, it was a little off-Broadway show. Now what? And I legitimately didn't know what to do, but I met somebody who through a contact through the Spandex show, who was involved in music theater licensing. And I just said, hey, can I get a coffee with you? Can we just talk? I love what you do. I want to hear more about it. I'm at a crossroads. I was just very honest about it. And so I met him for coffee and he said, listen, this seems about right around this time. People do feel like they're looking for some kind of a career switch or a change. And I have a friend who's starting this corporate events agency and, you know, he's looking for an intern and maybe it's something you might be interested in. This events agency, they produce very theatrical productions and themed environments for brands. And listen, meet him for coffee. And so his name is Chuck. I met Chuck, who was starting proscenium at the time. It was sort of in its infancy. And having that sort of it wasn't an interview, it was a coffee. So I think that sort of took the pressure off of it. And he happened to be looking for someone with a very varied background. So he wanted someone who had all these seemingly disparate experiences, but all kind of under the umbrella of entertainment. So
you really, were the missing piece for him. Like, it's funny how him, that works sometimes.
Yeah,
like,
because he was getting resumes that were very targeted to someone who's worked a lot in visual design or someone who's worked in only the production side. But to have sort of a grab bag of different experiences all relating to entertainment served this industry really well. And so the industry that I'm in now and been in for 13 years is the event marketing. So the live event side of marketing.
I personally believe I'm just going to say this, like as somebody who ran a business, especially a small business, it is so valuable to encounter people that have had a variety of experiences. Like the kind of language you get when you're a college student, a lot of times is that you have to be super focused. You have to be super dialed in. You just do one thing, one thing, one thing, one thing. It sounds like you're Chuck and I like had a similar, like, so many people value a variety of experiences when they interview candidates. I just want to point that out. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is that I want to kind of like paint a picture of like how, like, these are big, beautiful productions. You're working with companies like T-Mobile and mm-hmm. like Walmart or, mm-hmm. or that, yep. like major, just kind of give a sense of like the scale of these things. How many people
are
there?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, for example, for Walmart, something we had worked with, this is years ago now, almost a decade ago, but we produced their shareholders meeting, which is so, I mean, it's basically in a basketball arena in Arkansas near their headquarters. for 20,000 people, internal audience, shareholders, I mean, but with massive production, like a full out concert interspersed with a message from the CEO or the CFO. And they're massive, massive productions. So I think just learning that skill set and getting to work on such big productions and helping to do this stage design and the visuals that are going on screen and understanding all the back of house production too, and everything needed to put these, I mean, there's a lot that goes into these productions. And so we'll work on a one day event for a couple hours for a year. I mean, these things are planned well in advance and venues are sourced even years before that. So these are, I didn't know about this industry because a lot of times
it's invisible.
The audiences are usually internal. So
yes,
we do a ton of work for T-Mobile and we do a lot of what we do for them as our agency is a lot of their internal events. So big, I mean, multi-thousand people, but it's still in T-Mobile employees. So the general public isn't always seeing it. It's not always televised outside of that.
I guess one of the things, like when you're in school and you don't see it, if you haven't been exposed to it, but there is this huge world out there of like trade shows and corporate events and all this business to business stuff that if you're just a mm-hmm. student or if you're a regular consumer, you have no idea that it exists at all. And right. It's major business. It's big business. And it sounds like this is what you got involved with a creative context. So like, tell me a little bit about what your responsibilities are and what your schedule's like. Are you
right.
9 to 5? Do you get to just chill out or what's your story?
Well, a few things have happened. I've been in this job for many years. I mean, I think 13 years. There's sort of the pre-COVID time and there's the post-COVID. And so we are now a fully remote company. We have an office, but so my day-to-day is a little different just in that the way that we work during the day and COVID is a little different. I'm generally, 9 to 5 is kind of when I'm in front of my computer, but also we're traveling a ton. I also work better at night sometimes when there's a little bit less of the emails and messages coming through. So it's just that the way of working is a little bit different. But my role as a senior creative director is, I've had this conversation very early on in my time of like, what does the word creative mean in the title creative director? Is it a noun or is it an adjective? Am I a creative director or am I a director of creative? And I think everyone has a different opinion. For me, I feel like I'm more a director of creative because I'm not necessarily the one that's just always coming up with all the ideas, but it's sort of the point of contact of a lot of different parties to kind of channel everything through so that the client's getting kind of one complete experience for the brand, or so the brand's showing up consistently, but I'm working with a number of designers, or I'm working with a set designer and a lighting designer and a graphics and animation and music and all of these things, but sort of all channeling through all that channeling together so that it's a cohesive. So I'm making sure it all kind of looks and feels right for the brand.
That's terrific. So that's a very good description. Now, let me ask you this, because I know that you also do some DJing as well.
Yes.
Like real DJing, like you did the like Time 100 event or something like that. So that's a very exciting thing. Is the job that you have with Proscenium, do you enjoy being around because you're a creative person, the creative talent? Like, is that part of the appeal to you? And seeing the productions come together and seeing what they look like, is that part of the appeal? Or like, do you, for your creative endeavors, do you find that like DJing is really where your creativity is allowed to flourish?
I think the non-answer to that is both.
No, that's a good answer.
My DJing journey has only started a few years ago because of my time at Proscenium. So I think to your point of the podcast, these things unfolding a little bit unexpectedly, but also sort of feeling right and, checking a lot of boxes and being an organic extension of my creativity, that is just even proven even more so with this DJing, because a part of my job at Proscenium since day one is curating music for brands. So as it relates to at an event, we would have, you're walking into a big room 30 minutes before the show, we call them shows, what is the vibe? What do you want people to feel leading up to the first keynote presenter? You want, ultimately they need to leave that presentation and or keynote feeling something and driven to do something. So a lot of that's music. And so I would people on our team do this as well, but we put together these very specific playlists specific to a brand and then also have to get that approved. So there's a lot of levels of thought and care and then building, you know, the energy level up from 30 minutes into a minute before the show. So thinking about the journey musically, you know, been doing that for so long, and it does feel pretty natural to do that. And then so what DJing has done for me is I can sort of take that same thought process and just apply it a little differently when I'm mixing. But it's the same. I have that same intention when I'm doing it of being very, very thoughtful about every single track, how that all transitions. But I really believe that idea of thinking about it that way comes from my time at Proscenium.
That's fantastic.
Of curating music that way. And, you know, a lot of the events I've done as a DJ have been events like the Time 100 and some other, you know, other gala, that type of thing. So I know that world really well. And I think that I'm able to apply that knowledge to events DJing, because that's also its own style of, you know, own way of doing things. And also different audiences too. It's a very varied audience in terms of demographics.
Now, let me ask you something, and I'm not looking for you to like reveal your like secrets here, but you live in Manhattan and you mm-hmm. live in and you own an apartment. So mm-hmm. it sounds like you can actually be in this career and make a living for yourself, correct?
Yeah, I think where I've found myself right now, and I'm very, very fortunate, is I have this full-time job with Proscenium. I very much enjoy it, and I really do love the people too. I mean, that's a huge part of this is we're a small agency, I think 25, 26 people, but the people really are a huge part of it, of the culture there. And, you know, on top of that, I think what that has done is afford me a chance to pursue the DJing that I've been able to do is sort of that complements each other. I think right now I'm happy to have both, and I'm lucky that both things can occur at the same time. And I have flexibility in my schedule at work. I can, you know, I have another time event on Thursday. So it's sort of this interesting balance, but it's energizing, I think, because I can actually, on one hand with Proscenium, really support the production from behind the scenes. And then I have a little moment to still perform. I still see these DJing opportunities as performances. And so I get a little bit of that time to put on a show. So with a different type of creative outlet, but I think I need both.
Let me ask you this question, because I think this is a good question for people that are curious about performing or entering the entertainment world. Like, I think it's very true that when you're in college and you're trying to figure out what career, you're trying to think about what you like and mm-hmm. what you want to be doing and spending your time doing. But I don't think a lot of people are spending time thinking about how they want their lives to be. Mm-hmm. Like, do they want to be able to take like yearly trips to India or Japan? Do they want to be able to send their kid to summer camp? Do they not really need that much? And do they really want the fulfillment to come from their job as opposed to what they're doing outside? So how, can you talk a little bit about how you think about your life in the context of work versus play? Mm-hmm. And when you think about employment, like what your driving decisions are?
Yes. So I think as a younger person, you know, high school, college, I thought I put so much weight on my profession to be a very definitive piece of my life. So that what I did professionally is who I am. And
I think that's common.
And that's probably, I think that might be how I was raised, and not just beyond family, but also the school I went to, all that. I think what only a lot later in my life has I finally understood is that, you know, you can enjoy what you do professionally, but also you don't have to define yourself by it. You can be many things or you can enjoy other things. I think there is a balance, but that did take a long time to find. So I think there was that weight of, I have to go to school for this. And I can only be this thing. And I have to keep climbing because I'm so defined by my title. I mean, I think that at some point, if that stuff is not satisfactory, then everything's thrown off balance. But if there's something else in your life too, to kind of complement it, then it sort of takes the pressure off and I can actually really enjoy being at Proscenium, enjoy the people, enjoy my day to day, and then also have something else that keeps me energized and puts me in a flow state, or so it all works together. But again, that did take a long, I wouldn't have been able to say this a few years ago. I think that it just needed to kind of go through all of it. And I mean, I will say, if going back to your point about college, maybe I was pretty active in a lot of different stuff outside of classes. So I was in an a cappella group for a few years. I was also
What was it called?
Last Call.
Are they still around?
They're still around. Yep.
Okay. All right. Shout out to Last Call at Cornell.
Yeah. Shout out for Last Call. And I also was active in my fraternity, TKE, Tau Kappa Epsilon. I was also social chair for that. And I don't think I realized at the time that somehow that may have informed my event production life. I was still overseeing events. You know, I didn't, but I just did it. It was a natural, it felt like a natural extension of what I enjoyed doing. So all these things, you know, those parts of my college life that were not necessarily academic all shaped me. And I'm glad I had the opportunity to do a few different things out there in school specifically, because it sort of showed a broader horizon of opportunities.
So let me ask you this, and let's wrap up with this. It's like, if somebody is considering moving into a career or a career change, and they are thinking about entertainment or production or, you know, theme parks or anything where people are like really being entertained. Mm-hmm. And one of the big takeaways I think that you said is like, and I truly believe this, is that you have to have the courage to kind of really listen to that inner voice and really listen to what's going on. Because if you don't, you're going to be led astray, I think, right? That's one takeaway that I'm hearing from you. Would you agree?
I would. I think there's something, if you feel like something is not satisfied, or you continually have this dream, or you have this thought, like if you can, it's worth exploring. Or I will say that DJing, for example, came from a conversation a few years ago with my friend Kevin, who's like, Sam, I've heard you talk about this so much. I'm sick of hearing you talk about it. Just do it already. So sometimes you need people in your court to be accountable to.
Yes.
To just push you. And I need that. So by him saying, get that, I'm going to watch you buy the equipment right now. Buy it. Buy the most introductory thing. But now you have it and you have to tell me you got it and you're going to put a mix together. And then funny enough, then Proscenium asked me to DJ the holiday party a few months later. So that gave me something to work towards. But I function best when I'm accountable. So I think having accountability partner in some capacity is really important to going from thinking about doing something but to taking that class, even if it's once a week or once a month, just those little things will help kind of down the road versus trying to do it all at once. I think just
doing things gradually, doing things with some level of accountability, whether it's a friend or a class that enforces you to deliver something.
I think for me, that's worked the best. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about what can people who are starting out in an entertainment field, what can they expect the first couple of years after college? Yeah. Because you're going to kind of the bottom rung.
Yeah. I think this being open and willing to kind of say yes and get it done no matter what it is. I mean, on one hand, these shows we put together and these events we produce are beautiful and they're exciting, but the amount, there's a lot of work and a lot of detail involved. And for something to go really smoothly, that's because there's been a year's worth of planning and every little detail and backup plans in case something, you know, fail safes, all those things have to happen and they're not really fun. And all the Zoom calls and all there's a lot of behind the scenes that I think is not fun, but it's important. And so being willing to just sort of do it and knowing that it's not always going to, again, that will be very rewarding, but it may not always be fun. And I think that's, especially when you're entering the business, just being open and saying yes, I think will just make you more valuable because you will have a broader spectrum of experience.
And does that apply also to like young performers, or like what kind of advice would you give to people who want to try their hand at performing?
I'm a little hesitant to answer that, only in that it's been so long since I've pursued like stage work and singing. I do think, but it's probably a similar idea of like, you're going to have to do a lot of things and meet. I think it's also important to meet a lot of people and work because that human connection and that people want to work with who they know. So I could say that professionally with my job at Proscenium, we work with someone we love. We hire them back over and over and over again. So be, you know, show up on time. Say what you're going to do, say you're going to do it, and I'll follow through, all those things, because ultimately you want to work with people you can trust. And so just, I think, never underestimate the power of just making those really important connections with people that are more than just asking for a job, but actually proving that you can do it and you're willing to be a good partner.
I think that's great advice. And you know, the human-centric aspect of this makes me think that it is a little bit, and this is, I said I was going to wrap up before, but I do want to dig into this a little bit because I want to understand, certain professions are really at risk from automation, white collar jobs, AI, things like that. How do you see that impacting your industry, if at all? It might not. It might make it even more important, more valuable. And how do you see kind of the events industry in particular looking in like 5 years or so?
Well, we have this discussion a lot at work. I think that there's the events are events for a reason because people want to come together. So there will still be an impetus for people to want to be in the same room with each other. I know we've obviously produced virtual events for, you know, during COVID, we produced a ton of virtual events and they were important and they kept us afloat. And I think, but ultimately people want to be together. So I think there will always be that need. I think the way that AI, the way that I'm understanding AI showing up, and this is, again, this changes almost by the day of how AI is valuable in our industry. I mean, it can help us a little bit with some design, you know, some design, visual design things here and there to get a point across more quickly in a pitch. But ultimately, I don't necessarily think it's going to replace a lot of what we're doing. I think we need the human component, even down to like when we're personally, when we're in a meeting, like we're actively taking notes. I think that we need to be talking to each other. I think just reading a digest of the notes afterwards that AI has generated isn't necessarily always the most effective way either. We need to be in the room together, even if it's virtually.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of industry where AI is not going to really disrupt as much as it is going to augment what you're able to do.
I'd like to believe that. Yeah, I feel like it will enhance. I've seen it sort of help us be more efficient in certain things, but I haven't seen it yet replace anything. And I'm hoping that this isn't happening, but it's hard to imagine that.
Well, I think you're ultimately at the end of the day, you're in a very human centric business about getting people to respond to certain things. And
yeah. And you have to be in the room for that. I mean, there is a feeling that happens when that's why people go to see a piece of theater. That's why you're not watching a piece of theater virtually. Generally, you're going into a theater to be in that space with other people to sort of experience that energy together.
All right. Well, yeah. Sam, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for all of these, sharing your really kind of like wild. And it's really interesting how you combine kind of like a classical, ambitious career trajectory with a very unconventional career and came out on top. It's awesome.
Oh. So go on.
right.
Yeah.
All right. So, Sam, thanks so much for being on the program.
Oh, it's my honor.
And everybody else, I hope you find your dream job.